last Sunday, if you were here last Sunday and then, or in one of our small groups last week, you'll remember that we talked a lot about listening. We talked about listening, really listening well, not just hearing what's being said. And we talked about it as being part of what it means to really, truly love each other. We pulled out the 1 Corinthians 13 passage, which has all these descriptor words of what love is. And we connected that to listening, that one of the ways that we love people, which is what we're commanded by Jesus to do, is by listening well. We talked about some of the characteristics of what makes for good listening, some of the things we came up with. And some of these were from Sunday morning, but many came up in the small groups as well. That good listeners are deliberate about eliminating, or at least limiting, distractions. It includes focusing on what the other person is saying rather than what we want to say next. You know, sometimes when you're in a conversation, what you're thinking about is, oh, that made me think of this, and I should tell them about this. And you're so focused there that you've lost complete track of whatever it is the other person is saying. Good listeners are really interested in understanding. And what that does, when we listen to understand, is it leads us to pay attention to nonverbal cues, things like our body language. When we're listening to understand, we ask questions. We ask questions just simply to clarify the meaning. What I heard you say is this. Is that correct? Or tell me more about those kind of questions. And those kind of questions, they ensure that we're truly hearing what's being said. But they also allow the other person to clarify, to make sure that they're being heard. But we don't just ask those kind of clarifying questions. We ask questions just simply because we're curious, because we want to understand, to know the other person. Good listeners, they're not afraid to disagree, but they do so in a way that doesn't demean the other person, that doesn't invalidate their feelings and their experiences. I wonder if there's anybody, particularly if you've been thinking about listening over the last week, if you have an experience that you would be able to share of someone who listened well to you. Now, in combination with the listening, one of the things that we also talked about last week was the importance of asking good questions. We talked about good questions as being those that don't just lead to a yes or no answer. We also identified that they're usually questions that allow for various levels or various different depths of an answer, so that the person who's answering, they can, if they don't feel comfortable at all, they can just give you the top level answer. And if they trust you a little bit more, depending on how you've asked the question, they might go just a little bit deeper. Good questions come from a place of genuine humility, of genuinely wanting to understand the other person more than we need to be understood ourselves. And so just as I asked this last week, and I'm going to ask again this week, did you come across any or think up any good questions? Henry Nouwen is a renowned scholar, author, priest. We've got a number of his books back in our library. Deeply spiritual human being. And he wrote this: listening is an art that must be developed, not a technique that can be applied as a monkey wrench to nuts and bolts. It needs the full and real presence of people to each other. It is indeed one of the highest forms of hospitality. I'm going to read that again. Listening is an art that must be developed, not a technique that can be applied as a monkey wrench to nuts and bolts. It needs the full and real presence of people to each other. I want to pause there because we've been talking about listening and kind of thinking about it in a one-on-one conversation with somebody. But what if we extended that? So for instance, for those who were part of the cheering section for the marathon this morning up on Bloor, what if we thought about being present in that group? And then what does it mean to be really present so that I'm listening to what's happening around me, to my actual neighborhood, not just the neighbors? Nouwen goes on, it is indeed one of the highest forms of hospitality. Which leads me to what I'm focusing on this week, which is hospitality. And I wanted to start with where we were last week because it all intertwines. It all goes together. It's not so much that it builds, but it's all part and parcel of the same thing, which ultimately is really just about how we love well. And hospitality is about belonging. Now, if you are reading the book along with us, chapter 3 is the chapter that we're reading. And he has some really, really great research in there that talks about how people aren't interested in just coming into a welcoming environment, but they're actually looking for places to belong. And so I'd really encourage you, whether or not you're part of one of the small groups, to read that chapter 3, to just be thinking about how that translates to our church. And so then I was thinking about, well, okay, so if we use the word hospitality, what does that actually mean? Like, what comes to mind when we think of that word hospitality? And when immediately what comes to mind for me is like, okay, if I go to somebody's house to visit them, they are being hospitable. They are opening up their home. It usually also requires that, like, their home is clean and tidy. And or if I'm going to extend hospitality, I expect to myself that my house is clean and tidy and, like, there's actual food prepared, or like all of these kind of different things, assumptions about what hospitality is. I just wanted to give an opportunity. If there's something that twigs in your mind when you hear the word hospitality, what might that be? I was thinking also, when I thought about hospitality, the fact that we have an entire something that we call the hospitality industry. So we've turned hospitality into a commercial industry, into a global money-making thing, hotels, restaurants and the like, that are, you have professionals doing the hospitality. Hospitality is about creating a safe space. We talked about some of that at our small groups last week, that a safe space is a space that's free of judgment. It's a space where, and these are Nouwen's words again, strangers can cast off their strangeness and become our fellow human beings. A bit further in the same book, he talks about going from being a stranger to being a friend, that's what hospitality invites. It's a space in which there's room for listening and for good questions. It's a space in which the other is a valued guest, not just an obligation or responsibility. See, hospitality is really about community, which is another way of talking about belonging. In Leviticus, in 1934, and I don't often include Leviticus when I'm preaching, but in this instance, because Leviticus is one of those books in the Old Testament that is packed full of commandments from God, all sorts of instructions from God. And this, in verse 34 of chapter 19, is one of those commandments. And it's a commandment that shaped Israel and that should continue to shape us. This is how it reads. Again, it's Leviticus 19:34. The alien who resides with you shall be to you as the native born among you. You shall love the alien as yourself, for you were aliens in the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. Now, the word alien is weird for us to use because I think of space people coming down and visiting us. But it's just a word that means foreigner or stranger, somebody who wasn't originally part of Israel. It's a stranger. Anybody that we don't know really fits under this category of alien. Anybody that we are not personally connected to by maybe just a couple degrees of separation constitutes the alien. The alien who resides with you, the stranger, the person that you don't know, who happens to be in your vicinity, shall be to you as the native born among you. You shall love them as yourself, for you were also aliens, strangers, foreigners in the land of Egypt. And then the way God ends his commands, I am the Lord your God. Now, in the ancient world, this principle of hospitality was essential for people's safety and for their well-being. There wasn't a whole hospitality industry back then. People couldn't simply pay for accommodation and food. They were completely dependent on others. Now, as an aside, I think it's interesting that we have created an entire global industry to ensure that we never have to depend on other people, to ensure that we can be completely independent if we can afford it. this elevation of independence, which is, I think might be unique to our period in history, as one of our highest values, is so contrary to the values of community and belonging that flow through Scripture. Even when we're welcomed into someone's home, think about how we play that out. Even when we're welcomed into someone's home, how many of us were taught, always take something, take a bottle of wine, take some food to share, take a gift, a hostess gift of some kind. In a sense, take something to pay your way so you're not just receiving, you're also giving. Think about when somebody has invited you into their home, the kind of obligation you feel that might be right there front and center in your brain or just nagging you at the back that says, oh, now I got to invite them into my home, right? Like, and I don't want to, but I have to now. Like, we have to pay it back because we can't just receive, because that turns us into just receivers, just dependents. In the ancient world, hospitality was expected because it was necessary. But there were limits to what was required. And one of those limits was that you weren't required to actually be hospitable to the strangers and the foreigners. When God commanded Israel, as he did in Leviticus 19:34, he was commanding them to be different. He was commanding them to be more inclusive than everybody else, more welcoming than everybody else, to be the actual embodiment of his kingdom. So hear it again, the alien who resides with you shall be to you as a native born among you. You shall love the alien as yourself, for you were aliens in the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. You have to be hospitable, God is saying. You have to show hospitality, not just to your family and your friends or your visiting relative that came from afar, to everybody, the person on the street that you don't know, the refugee who has flooded in, the immigrant, the whoever. The hospitality, you need to treat them all as if they are your family, as if they are your friends. And so think about for a moment the story of the Good Samaritan. You're probably, most of you are probably familiar with it. It's the story of a man who was attacked by robbers who left him for dead in a ditch. It doesn't say in the Bible he was in a ditch, but in my head, he was dead in a ditch, almost dead in the ditch by the side of the road. And he was ignored by a couple passersby, and then a Samaritan stopped to help him. Now, Jesus told this story in response to the question, who is my neighbor? And it was the question asked most likely because it was already agreed that the greatest commandments were to love God and to love your neighbor. And so the person asking the question wanted to know, where are the limits? Who is my neighbor? Who do I have to love? Who do I have to extend hospitality to? Who do I have to listen to? And who don't I have to bother with or bother listening to? They wanted to know exactly who, what was the limit, who do I have to be kind to, generous to? And so Jesus told the story of the Good Samaritan to point out that there are no limits to who we are expected to love. Even the people that our surrounding culture says you don't have to love them, you don't have to listen to them, you don't have to extend hospitality to them. Jesus says, everybody, there's no limits. Everybody's inside this commandment. This whole idea that we're required to love, to be hospitable toward everyone, especially the alien or the stranger among us, it comes up over and over and over again throughout the Bible. When Israel is in trouble with God, it's often connected to their failure to love the stranger. There's this tiny, tiny little book in the Old Testament. It's the very last book of the Old Testament. It's called Malachi. And Malachi was one of Israel's prophets. And in this book, God warns the people of impending judgment against them for all sorts of things, including those who thrust aside the alien. In the New Testament, in the book of Hebrews, in chapter 13, verse 2, we read this: do not neglect to show hospitality for strangers. Again, that's Hebrews 13, verse 2. Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers. For by doing that, some have entertained angels without even knowing it. And that, what the author of Hebrews is talking about, is a reference back to a story in Genesis 18. And it's a story that begins in verse 2. And I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I want to read a fair bit of it. And it's a story about Abraham. Abraham is one of the first people that we meet once Israel's story gets going. This is actually before they were really Israel. Abraham looked up, and he saw three men standing near him. When he saw them, he ran from the tent entrance to meet him and bowed down to the ground. He said, "My Lord, if I find favor with you, do not pass by your servant. Let a little water be brought and wash your feet and rest yourselves under the tree." Listen to that from a hospitality perspective, right? He sees these strangers approaching. He doesn't hide, hoping they won't think he's home. He runs out to greet them. He greets them in a way that says, "I am here as your servant. Please don't just keep going. Please allow me to serve you. Allow me to bring you some water to let you rest your feet for just a moment. Let me bring a little bread that you may refresh yourselves. And after that, you can pass on, since you've come to your servant." So they said, "Do as you have said." And Abraham hastened to the tent to Sarah and said, "Make ready quickly 3 measures of choice flour, knead it and make cakes." And Abraham ran to the herd and took a calf, tender and good, and gave it to the servant who hastened to prepare it. Then he took curds and milk from the calf that he had prepared and set it before them. And he stood by them under the tree while he ate. Now he had just said, "Hey, stay for some water and some bread." And instead, what he did when they said, "Okay, we'll do it," he prepared them. And he got other people to prepare them a banquet. He went over and above just the basic needs. They've been walking a while. They might be thirsty. So he went over and above. Now, as the story goes, that we discover that these men were actually angels. And I think sometimes we read this story, if we're familiar with it, and we know that off the top. So we think that's not strange that Abraham was that, because he saw these three men. He knew they were like angelic. They must have been glowing or something. But there's nothing in the way that it's written in scripture to suggest that he had any inkling of who they were at that point. And one of the things that they do is promise Abraham and Sarah that despite their old age, God's promise of a child for them is going to be fulfilled. Now, when these two men, I think that is the point when Abraham goes, we've just met messengers of God. Now, when they leave Abraham, these men go on to Abraham's nephew's city where he lived, which is a notorious city named Sodom. And when they arrived in that place, Lot rushed out to meet them, just like Abraham did, and invited them to stay with his family in his home. Now, there's a few things that go on, and eventually they do go to Lot's home with him. But listen to how everybody else who lived there responded. They, all of them, surrounded Lot's home, threatening the strangers. Calling, "You've got to let them out. You got to let them out, or we're going to come in and get them." No hospitality at all. They called for Lot to send them out. When he refused, they tried to break down the door. Now, that city of Sodom is an extreme example of a lack of hospitality. And in fact, anybody else in the ancient world would have frowned on that complete lack of hospitality, the violence that was in that. And it's a story that illustrates the extremeness of the evil of that city. Now, it's interesting that when we talk about that story in our day and age, we don't focus on hospitality as being the great evil. Why? I think because we don't so much value hospitality. It's nice if you can do it, but it's not a big deal. Sodom's end result was extermination. The entire city was exterminated. This is the story that goes before that the town people were threatening the visitors, calling them out, trying to break down Lot's door simply for providing hospitality. God's command to Israel and to us that we are to welcome the alien, the foreigner, the stranger, goes way above and beyond what was originally expected in his day and age. There's another passage in Matthew 25. It's the first book of the New Testament. In Matthew 25, and it begins at verse 31. And again, it might be a passage that you're already familiar with, but when we read passages that we're already familiar with, we sometimes shut our brains off because we think, I already know what that one says. But again, as we listen, why we're practicing dwelling in the word is so that we can practice actually hearing what it is that God has to say through these words. So I invite you to hear, again, Matthew 25, I'm beginning at verse 31. This is Jesus speaking. When the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, then he will sit on the throne of his glory. All the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate people one from another as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats, and he will put the sheep at his right hand and the goats at his left. Then the king will say to those at his right hand, "Come, you who are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. I was naked, and you gave me clothing. I was sick, and you took care of me. I was in prison, and you visited me." Then the righteous will answer him, "Lord, when was it that we saw you hungry and gave you food, or thirsty and gave you something to drink? And when was it that we saw you a stranger and welcomed you, or naked and gave you clothing? And when was it that we saw you sick or in prison and visited you?" And the king will answer, "Truly, I tell you, just as you did it to one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine." When Jesus uses the phrase "least of these," he's talking about those who were the least in society, the widows, the orphans, the strangers, the foreigners, the aliens. "Just as you did it to one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did it to me." This is hospitality, to treat every person we meet as if they were Jesus himself. Can you imagine what it would be like if in every person we saw Jesus? I wonder how our behavior would change. I wonder how we would speak differently if we really truly looked at somebody and saw Jesus, not just them. Imagine that whenever anybody else looked at you, they saw Jesus. What would it feel like to be treated as if you were Jesus? What would our church be like if everyone, if all of us saw each other, regardless of whether or not the other person is a Christian or a stranger or someone we've known forever? What would our church be like if we all saw each other as Jesus? If every time we walked through the door in here and anybody else we saw in this room, we went, "Oh, Jesus, Jesus," not as a swear, just, "Oh, I see Jesus in you. I see Jesus in you. You are Jesus." What would our church be like? Not just if we did it in our day-to-day lives, which is hard enough, but if when we all gathered together, that was what it looked like when we were together. When Jesus said in the Gospel of John, we read that he said, "This is a new commandment that I give you, that you would love each other just as I have loved you. You would love each other." That's how we love each other, seeing Jesus. Imagine if you really, like, if you looked at somebody and you saw Jesus, how much would you listen? What great questions would you ask? How deeply would you want to know them because you see Jesus there? Here's the thing. If people are going to experience being loved by God, it will be because they have experienced being loved by us. It will be because they've experienced being heard by us. It will be because they've experienced being welcomed by us, but not just welcomed as we often think of it, as simply being nice to people, but welcomed in a way that communicates that we want to know them and to be known by them. It's about belonging, not just welcoming. It's about providing a space and people who are more interested in knowing and understanding the other than they are in judging and dictating rules and expectations. It's about making room for all types of people with all sorts of ideas and interests and values. Henry Nouwen identifies that hospitality is about creating space for the stranger to become a friend. It's not about the stranger becoming a dependent. It's about friendship. It's about true community. It's about belonging. And in that space of belonging, both parties, all parties, are free to share their gifts, their stories, their experiences, because they are interdependent. This is how we love as Jesus loved. This is how we love as Jesus commanded, by being welcoming, by creating spaces of belonging, not just being nice to each other.